Service safe.
Professor Buzzkill. Mini-Mets.
Yes, yes, indeedy. It's the old professor here once again. I want to take you back to Valley Forge, Buzzkillers, the winter of 1777. George Washington and his Continental Army were encamped and dug in against a British attack. They waited out the winter, but it was a brutal experience. The weather was very bad, and soldiers tried to endure disease, malnutrition, and exposure. Many deserted, and more than 2,500 died by the 1st of March, 1778. But the war news in general was also bad. The Continental Army had suffered several extensive defeats in 1777. The British Army was only 18 miles away in relatively comfortable Philadelphia, and they were preparing to wipe out the remaining colonials as soon as the weather allowed them to mount an offensive. And on the international scene, the American rebels were more or less alone. The French hadn't yet allied with the Americans as the winter came on in 1777. They would formally join the Americans in February 1778, but not engage the British militarily until March. Until March 1778, the American forces were alone and increasingly desperate. General George Washington tried to use the winter at Valley Forge to plan military strategies for 1778, to get his troops back in order and to train them for further engagements. Undoubtedly, it was a highly stressful period for the Continental Army, but it was an especially trying period for Washington himself. In addition to having his responsibility for his soldiers weighing on him and the weather being so bad, critics in the ranks of important revolutionary political leaders, you know, in other places in the country who questioned his generalship and his military acumen were an irritant. It's not surprising, therefore, that Washington spent a lot of time at Valley Forge deep in thought and indeed prayer. One of the stories that's been flying around the internet for years, as well as having a previous career in pamphlets and newspapers in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, says that Washington was visited by an angel or spirit who told him of the broad challenges facing the nation during the next century. This vision emboldened General George to persevere not only at Valley Forge, but during the rest of the Revolutionary War and during the early years of the Republic. So our question here today for this mini-myth is, did an angel or a vision come to Washington in the depths of the Valley Forge winter and help save the American Revolution and secure the future of the country? And I'll get to that, Buzzkillers, but right now I need to say a few words about our wonderful sponsors, Harry's Razors. Those veteran Buzzkillers out there, you know how much I love Harry's Razors. I've been using them long before they became a sponsor of the show. But I'll tell you, probably one of the things that wasn't on General George Washington's mind or the minds of his troops at the time in Valley Forge was how well they're getting a shave. But it's on my mind almost every morning, and it's on your mind. I know. I use Harry's Razors because I got sick to death of paying the outrageous prices for big-name razors at the drugstore. You know what these companies do. They make a tiny little change in their blades or the color of their handle, come out with the, quote, newest version, and raise their already high prices. Harry's is different. Harry's doesn't believe in what's called upcharging. They've made their razors better and better, and their prices have remained the same. Not only does Harry's charge a fraction of what the ripoff razors companies charge, the good Buzzkillers at Harry's mail the razor blades right to you on a regular schedule that you set up with your membership. Harry's five-blade razors now have a softer flex hinge for more comfortable glide, a trimmer blade for those hard-to-reach places, and boy, do I use that every day, Buzzkillers, a lubricating strip, and a textured handle for more control when it's wet. And their prices are still just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstores. How do they do this? By owning the factory in Germany where they make the blades, Harry's can produce high-quality razors themselves and sell them online for half the price of rip-off razors. Now, Harry's has a special offer for you Buzzkillers out there. They'll send you their popular trial set for free when you go to harrys.com. The trial set, by the way, includes a razor, a five-blade cartridge, and shaving gel. You just pay a tiny amount of $3 for the shipping. Plus, just for you Buzzkillers, enter the code BUZZKILL at checkout, and you'll get their post-shave balm for free with your order. The post-shave balm is great. I use it every day. I look better. Lady Buzzkill will confirm that. You'll look better, and your face will feel fantastic all day. Let me repeat all that. Go to harrys.com, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com, enter the code BUZZKILL, that's two Z's, two L's, at checkout, you'll get a great razor, great blades, great shave cream, and the post-shave balm is for free. Do it now, BuzzKillers. Harrys.com, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com, code at checkout, BUZZKILL. Now, let's go back and address this question of whether a vision came to George Washington and helped save the future of the country. Well, no, BuzzKillers. There is no reliable evidence that this or anything like it happened. There's lots of very clear evidence of where the story came from, however, and that aspect of the history of Washington's vision is fascinating. Among other things, it's yet another example of how many stories we're told come from the Revolutionary period but are really products of the later 19th century. Here's what happened. First published in the Philadelphia Inquirer in June 1861, a couple months after the outbreak of the Civil War, Washington's Vision, as it was entitled, was written by Wesley Bradshaw. And Wesley Bradshaw was a pseudonym for Charles Wesley Alexander, a Philadelphia journalist who lived from 1836 to 1927. Washington's Vision is Alexander's account of meeting a revolutionary veteran named Anthony Sherman. Sorry for all the names, BuzzKillers, but we got to get it right. And hearing the old man's tale of Washington's vision at Valley Forge, which Sherman claimed had been related to him by an officer in Washington's inner circle. We put the full version of the article on the website, so go there to see the whole thing. I'm going to give you a condensed version here. According to Sherman, Washington often spent time in his cabin praying. One evening, the general told a nearby officer, again, who later told Sherman, that a, quote, singularly beautiful being, unquote, had visited him during his time at prayer, and told him the following. Son of the Republic, the being said, listen and learn. And then the being proceeded to show Washington visions of the future of the Revolutionary War and the rise of the United States to take its place among the other great powers of the world. The visionary being told Washington of the scourge of slavery, for instance, which he called an ill-omened specter, and the coming of the Civil War. Americans, quote, set themselves in battle against each other. And as I continued looking, Washington said, I saw a bright angel on whose brow rested a crown of light on which was traced the word Union. The angel was bearing the American flag, which he placed between the divided nation. He said, remember, ye are brethren. Instantly, the inhabitants, casting down their weapons, became friends once more and united around the national standard. The next vision of the future presented to Washington was of a prosperous, industrious, and happy America. I beheld, Washington said, the villages, towns, and cities springing up, and the bright angel, planting the azure standard he had brought down in the midst of them, cried out with a loud voice, while the stars remain, and the heavens send down dew upon the earth, so long shall the Union last. The visionary being had warned Washington of the struggles of the Revolution, the difficulties the young nation would face, and of the Civil War. And that being stressed that the Civil War was the worst of these, but that the country would survive it if, quote, every child of the Republic learned to live for his God, his land, and the Union. Washington finished his story thus. With these words, the vision vanished, and I started from my seat and felt that I had seen a vision wherein had been shown me the birth, progress, and destiny of the United States. Such were the words I heard from Washington's own lips, the officer told Sherman, and America would do well to profit by them. Sherman then told the story to Wesley Bradshaw, that is, Charles Wesley Alexander, who wrote it down as an article. Washington's vision was one of many articles written by Alexander along the same lines, basically, and with the same kind of theme, otherworldly spirits warning American leaders of the perils of disunion and the Civil War. Another one was General McClellan's Dream, written and published by Alexander in 1862. That's a famous example. In this story, the head Union general, George McClellan, had a dream in which the spirit of George Washington came to him and revealed secret Confederate battle plans that later helped McClellan win an upcoming battle. In this dream, Washington said many of the same things about the crucial necessity of saving the Union that the visionary being told the general at Valley Forge. These two stories were highly popular and widely read during the Civil War and the following decades of rebuilding the nation. That's 1870 to 1900. Washington's vision, however, has seen a renewal of interest during the past 20 years or so, boosted, of course, by our friend, the Internet, and the ease with which such stories, myths, and urban legends have found a new lease on life through email and web postings and things like that. The spread of such patriotic tales really accelerated in the aftermath of the terrorist attacks of September 11th and during the gearing up for the wars that followed. Unfortunately, these stories fly around without any critical analysis or attention to historical fact and detail. There's no evidence, buzzkillers, of Washington reporting such a vision to any officer at Valley Forge at the time. This dramatic story doesn't appear in any of the recollections of his officers published after the war. And of course, there's absolutely no evidence in Washington's letters or papers that any such thing ever happened. Further, it's highly unlikely that a soldier named Anthony Sherman, who, remember, told the story to Charles Alexander, was encamped at Valley Forge. Although enlistment records and army records for the Revolutionary War aren't perfectly complete, they're nearly so. In fact, they're especially accurate considering that it was the 1770s. An officer named Anthony Sherman did serve in the Continental Army, but he was at Saratoga under the command of Benedict Arnold in late 1777, and not part of the Valley Forge contingent. Military pension records indicate that Sherman died in 1840, 21 years before he told of Washington's vision to Alexander in 1861. Finally, there's no evidence of the historical truth of Alexander's other stories, including McClellan's dream. And believe me, buzzkillers, McClellan was a relentless self-promoter and certainly would have crowed about being given direction from the founding father himself in the dream, especially if it resulted in a battlefield victory. There's a ton of evidence that Alexander's articles, like many other creative pieces written during the late 1850s and early 1860s, openly used Revolutionary War era themes in an effort to warn the nation of the coming Civil War, as was the case in Longfellow's Ride of Paul Revere, or to promote the Union cause and or to urge national unity. Although we can't be certain in this specific case, the Washington Visions case, and by certain, I mean beyond the shadow of any doubt, it's very, very likely that Alexander wrote these as propaganda for the patriotic Union effort, not as some kind of historical account of what happened at Valley Forge. The decades following the Civil War were perhaps the greatest period of patriotic literature, imagery, and symbolism in American history. And as Buzzkill Institute researchers have shown over and over, and as we've talked about on other episodes, popular ideas of things like the American flag, the national anthem, and the Pledge of Allegiance were largely products of the 1870s and succeeding decades, not the 1770s. And you know, there's precious little evidence of much of that kind of thing before the 1860s and 70s. In other words, there was no unstoppable flow of American patriotism and patriotic imagery that started in 1776 and has grown inexorably from then until now. Patriotism, like everything else, has its periods of growth, stagnation, and rebirth. It changes over time. It waxes and wanes. And almost nothing about American history has a pure and traceable 240-year pedigree. We don't need Valley Forge ghost stories to boost our national self-esteem. We ought to be grown-ups about it and accept that fact. We should concentrate on being proud of the good things that Americans have accomplished. We should be realistically contemplative about the stains on our national past, and we should have enough wisdom to know that there is indeed a difference. Talk to you next week, Buzzkillers.